You are listening to The Culture Racing 2, The Culture Radio, only on The Culture. You are listening to The Culture Radio, only on The Culture. You are listening to The Culture Radio, only on The Culture. You are listening to The Culture Radio, only on The Culture. You are listening to The Culture Radio, only on The Culture. You are listening to The Culture Radio, only on The Culture. You are listening to The Culture Radio, only on The Culture. You are listening to The Culture Radio, only on The Culture. You are listening to The Culture Radio, only on The Culture. You are listening to The Culture Radio, only on The Culture. You are listening to The Culture Radio, only on The Culture. You are listening to The Culture Radio, only on The Culture. You are listening to The Culture Radio, only on The Culture. You are listening to the...
Okay. It's Saturday morning, and I'm in one of my favorite spots. Since I'm a talker, any place I can talk is great for me. That means even the street and a lamppost. Anyway, good morning to everyone. I hope everybody is taking care of themselves and being cautious. It doesn't mean life has been impinging on you and putting you in jail. This is just like if you were ever young and you caught a bad cold and your mom took care of you, or your pop, or anybody. You were told that you have to rest and take care so you allow your body to get over what was happening. In this case, our bodies are walking through what's happening. We had an invasive virus that's here and will be here for, I guess, as long as it is till we figure out how to get rid of it. So in the interim, I don't worry about our science and our doctors figuring out what to do. I worry about us making sure we understand that we are doing things for our benefit as a person, as a country, as whatever you want to look at it. So, what have we got to lose? My subtitle for this week was kind of simple. We are never alone. Wawa has been growing as a chain of convenience stores. I like them. They've put together a good package. They serve interesting stuff. So if you need something in a hurry, like any other convenience store, and I've worked in that industry also. So instead of Wawa, I decided we're going to use WANA, W-A-N-A. We are never alone. When I was a kid, we probably had less than 2 billion people on the planet. Now we're getting close to 8 billion. I don't think it was just my birth that made us, you know, do four times what we were when I was a child. But I want us to understand that there are different ways of doing things, and it's up to us to decide that we don't have to break down barriers. We have to understand what we're dealing with. So I'm not lecturing. I'm going to go through some things I had last week. As I said, my alter ego had a lot of stuff that she was doing. It was interesting. So I cut back on some of my things that I'll bore you with today. But it's not boring. It really deals with what's happening to us and what things mean. Again, first thing on my list when I started putting together for today's show was a sandbag versus a butterfly. Sounds a little stupid, even to me. A sandbag is something that's just an amorphous bunch of sand, usually inside a bag, and it kind of slumps around. They even made sandbag-type chairs years ago. They probably still do. But a sandbag is not even a blunt instrument. The blunt instrument's a hammer. You'll hit something. A sandbag kind of shifts all over the place. It isn't the greatest way of accomplishing something. You could drop it on something. You can use it as a paperweight. Whereas a butterfly, on the other hand, is a natural thing that we didn't have to put together to use. It's there. And a butterfly is part of this greater scheme of our being that takes care of us. Butterflies actually live and die short existence in quite a lot of them. There are tons of varieties. Beside them being beautiful, they are one of the species that does take pollen from a flower to another flower and help nature grow. So butterflies serve a purpose beside looking good. It's one of the better decorations that I think God put on the planet. So just a light thing. The thought came to me, difference between a sandbag and a butterfly. I'd rather watch a butterfly than carry a sandbag. One of the things that I think we're learning as we go through this, I made some mention easily a month ago on some of the things. I'll hit them again. But we hear about infrastructure bills. We hear about our roads deteriorating, the bridges deteriorating, and the rest of it. I think at this point that the majority of people who are paying attention to what's happening, they use the term first responders. Now, in the old days, we thought of it as, well, police, fire, they go if there's a bell ringing and there's an emergency. For life to continue the way we've always been going, where we've developed from living in a cave to living in a hut to living in an apartment building or whatever you want to think of, we take life for granted sometimes. And I don't mean just the idea of living and breathing, but everything around us that happens. So now we understand that transportation, a bus driver, a train driver, depending what city you live in or what area you're in, people who take the trash away, people who drive trucks, because we've gotten to a country that's almost 330 million people. We still have a lot of room to grow, so don't get me wrong. But we, as we developed across the nation, and again, we were lucky, very fortunate to have some people who had great foresight, the founding fathers and what they put together as a constitution. And then we can jump up to Abraham Lincoln, forgetting the Civil War. The man had great foresight of where is the world going. You know, you see these people that you're amazed with, whether it's a Warren Buffett or a Nikola Tesla, people like that who can see something that we don't see, an Einstein, whatever. So people have leaped ahead. Abraham Lincoln put that transcontinental railroad together. He saw that he was spending our money to put the country together, even though it wasn't fully developed from coast to coast. But he figured we needed to link it. Before him, we had people who had enough foresight, and I'm talking about this, so you'll get the point I'm getting to shortly. We had people who said, well, we're 13 colonies. How do we grow? Big piece of land there. Mainly they came out of different backgrounds, but let's say at least European, and they understood what regimes were, or kingdoms, or the rest of it. When you have land next to you, if somebody settles in it, it could be a problem for you if they decide to fight with you. China and Russia are two examples. We had big areas where we developed in earlier years, and you had warlords that moved in next to you, and at some point they decided they like what you've got, so they'd start a fight. So there was enough foresight to grow our country. The Louisiana Purchase, the Northwest Territories. We went across the country. Yes, we had some battles with Mexico, which was larger than we were before we were what we are. They're on the same continent. They had already explored up into the West Coast and stuff and settled a lot of it. That's why you have, when you look through our country, it didn't amaze me to understand the diversity that this country has, even when I was younger, because I recognize how the hell did we get names like Los Angeles, San Francisco? These are all Hispanic, Latin-type names. They weren't by accident. Then you see, whether it's in Florida, we've got lakes with 72-letter names that are hard to pronounce. One of them we call Lake Toho, because it's a long Indian name. We've got a lot of roads that have Indian names. So the diversity of the population that lived in this country, settled this country, fought over this country and everything else, gave us all of the things from their culture, which we've all blended together. There is no country on this planet that I know of that is as blended. There are a couple of spots, a place like Singapore, a place like Panama. These were generally ports that ended up with a lot of people. Macau, over in the Asian area, where sailing people realized they had a port that was safe, they could go there and they could trade from there. New York City grew that same way. Amsterdam, part of it. So when you really understand, it's geography, topography, a lot of things that built up cities and the life that we now lead, till we ended up where we could travel around easier. But as we got to travel around easier, we tend to forget that why is the milk in our supermarket? Where does the meat come from? What does it take to get it there? So we've built this phenomenal infrastructure, a lot of it by companies who decided that they are in a business where they can make money if they can deliver a product. As I've said, economics is one of my majors. It's a natural science. I love understanding it. It's not just guns and butter, which we all learn in the basic course. It's what's viable if you're going to open up a business. You got to do some calculations. Am I on a back street where nobody's going to ever even see me? So we've built this phenomenal place, but now we've also helped the rest of the world build up. On purpose or not on purpose in a lot of cases. As I've said about China, the greed of American business to go there and keep more profits offshore and pay less taxes to support the country that built up the economy we have. The good side of it, it introduced people in a very populous country to living better and having more things. It's hard when you have a TV and your own jeans and a bicycle and a car and you go out and get your pizza when you want it, to go back to just working in the rice fields. So once that population has been exposed to, let's call it Western style of living, I'm not saying it's the greatest, but it is influential. They change the way they relate to people. It's harder to subvert them. So China will deal with its own issues. We've also noted, if anybody's watching, when you see pictures of whether it's Beijing or Venice, where the canals are, because of the normal business and people running around and everything in Venice, the waters were as murky as a lot of places where people live. But because of everything being kind of turned off or turned down, I saw a picture somebody took of one of the canals in Venice where you could see through the water like you're almost looking in a pool, a clean pool at a hotel or your own house. And I saw a jellyfish swimming through the waters. You never would have seen it except for what's happening. Does it mean we should all lock ourselves in? No, but we should appreciate something else. I want to label that something else, human infrastructure. It's not the bridges or the roads or the buildings that make us a society. It's the people who envisioned it, helped build it, and paid for it. We the people that brought us to this point. So when you hear about infrastructure, the delivery of food and everything else. So now we're hearing that people in meat plants, because people want to make more profit, maybe crowd their people together. You get somebody who knows how to design a production line. And I've studied process in that crazy technical high school in New York City that I went to. And I understand that if you can move A closer to B, you cut down the time of moving something. You cut down the space you need, the footprint that you pay for. That's all well and good. But if it gets to a point where we are attacked, not by Martians, who remind us that we're all Earthlings, and the Martians don't look at us as being black or white or red or pink or yellow, it doesn't matter to them. We're just the inhabitants of this planet that they're attacking or coming to. The virus just looks at us as something that's moving around, that's alive, that it could use as a host, because that virus is looking to survive. It's a thing that has its own life. And as we've gone through history, and you could look at different times, there are viruses that are stronger or weaker, just like if we look at the animal kingdom. An elephant doesn't get picked on by all the other animals. It's kind of big. A giraffe has a good kick, and it's too hard to bring down easily. So animals pick on animals they think they can get by with to survive. They need to eat. We're the same, but we don't have to kill each other to eat. We don't have to hate each other to eat. In fact, the more time we waste hating each other or not working with each other, the more we're spending our own life on things that are really not necessary. I don't have to love my neighbor, but I could honor that my neighbor and everybody else down that block and around the country help make what we call our nation. It's sad when we have a guy in charge who likes to tell you what a big developer he is. Maybe he means he developed film. I don't know. Because I'm from New York City. I'm a few years older than him. And if it wasn't for a great woman he hired who built Trump Tower, it might not have ever been done. He probably would have walked away from that like he did a lot of projects with a bankruptcy. It would have been finished. But he wanted to put his name on it like he does with a lot of things. Unfortunately, we were apathetic when it came to the last election. I've talked about that enough. But the human infrastructure, the people that make this a country or a world, is what's great. I've talked about how Britain, during World War II, when they were being bombed to death, we weren't in yet, they sent us their experimental jet engine, which was ahead of anybody else. I think even what Hitler was developing at the time. So that helped us develop. We'll talk about economics because it's real important for everybody to get comfortable with what's going on, even if they're not the president. Interestingly enough, human infrastructure is what we all comprise, and by working together, paying our taxes, doing things, helping each other, because when things are down, you can see that we do. By the way, let me just quickly say hello. I can just get running off. Jerry Alton on Facebook, people better vote Mitch McConnell and Donald Trump. Keep packing the courts with blah, blah, neo-Nazis, blah, 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 blah. Anybody who's paying attention knows that Mitch McConnell is recognizing that Donald may not be there next year. So Mitch McConnell, who has done his quid pro quo with Trump, remember, before Trump got into the presidency, the whole Republican Party hated him. They made him sign a statement that he wouldn't change parties when he was running. He even waved it around. He's making them pay because they told him what to do. Now he's telling them what to do. Mitch McConnell is out to leave his own legacy. And the sad part is, it's a legacy that he won't even live to see what it does to our country. So he wants to bring the Senate back so he could put a lot of judges in and fill every opening that he never filled before. He wouldn't even give a good man named Merrick Garland, who was a middle-of-the-road justice, well-liked by every side, a hearing. So this is a man who wants to exert his power to shape our country rather than working with other people. That's not how my government worked. When I was younger and I was there, a lot of times both sides would argue, we'd get together. The idea of our national government, it doesn't run the states. Each state is like a country. We have 50 sovereign governments that gave power to the federal government. When the president says, I can shut things down, no, he can't. When the president decides he wants to put a wall up, because again, I said, I'm going to jump all over the place. Just stick with me. This is the way I think, but I get every point covered. Sesame Street, I was a little too young before it came out, a little too old when it was out. I saw kids enjoy it. I think it's one of the greatest things on TV for educating and making people pay attention and learn, especially youngsters. So I'm going to use someone
not for good reason, but the Cookie Monster. I made someone who, you know, just gives you that he just wants his cookies. Donald Trump is our Cookie Monster, except the cookie he wants is money in his pocket. No matter what you see, no matter what you hear, the overarching raison d'etre for him being is how much can I get in my pocket? The Treasury, our Treasury, with our money, is the cookie jar. As I said, he's told us all that he never paid taxes. He's too smart. But does that mean we have to let him take our money to do what he wants or put it in his pocket one way or another? We've discussed that. His trips to his resorts every weekend, he's taken hundreds of millions of dollars that he's put into his companies, and there are other ways. I have offered, and I'm still serious, when he's out of office, if nobody has gotten to it, I will personally lend my services to teach them what to look for. So you'll see what he's done. So the man declares an emergency when he wants money to build a wall that we know how badly it was built when it fell over in a light wind. He tells you how magnificent it is. He just tells you what things are, and he assumes you're going to believe him because he's magnanimous and wonderful and a great builder. It was diversion of money, including from our active military, to build his wall because I told you, from his father, he learned when you have control of money and how it's spent, you can end up with revenue in your pocket. You don't have to just take the money out of the cash drawer. You could set up the contracts, and these people know they owe you something. Favors, money, whatever, but you end up getting what you want out of it. So, billions of dollars toward the wall, not for the active military and their kids and the housing. He declared an emergency. That was something he took real action on. I want you to understand that whether he's blaming China, the WHO, the World Health Organization, and I've been around a long time. I know the UN, I know the organizations, they do good. Nobody's perfect, nobody does everything right. But this is a man who is actually too weak. We call him a man because that's what he supposedly is. He's too weak to take blame for making a mistake, not even a teeny tiny mistake. He doesn't make mistakes. At least he'd like us to believe so. If we do that, again, I don't want to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. It's been sold too many times. But say blames China, anyone external. We have one of the greatest intelligence agencies on the planet. We monitor everything and everybody. If you read all the different papers and glean the pieces from each and then add them together and get an average, you'll know that the intelligence agencies warned him about what was happening in China with Wuhan. He disregarded it. He was in election mode. He's been in election mode since he got in office with his rallies. His rallies, again, take him out of the White House, puts more money in his pocket because he sells his T-shirts, his caps, and everything else. He's a man who doesn't wear hats, but as president, a few times he's worn his cap in official places when he's traveled. He wants you to see the pretty hats that he's made, the new models, so you'll order it. The man deserves to be somewhere else, not running our country. It will take us time to fix what he has done. He hollowed out our government because when you understand accounting, the less people he's paying in the government, the more money is left in that treasury, that cookie jar for him to play with. So that if you saw the overall figures that we spent X amount of dollars versus our budget, you might say, oh, we're in line with what the budget was guessing. Yeah, but it didn't go to people who were working. They're missing. He got rid of the people who normally would deal with the pandemic that was set up. There was a whole group set to brief him when he came in the office. He didn't talk to them at all. So let him blame anybody he wants, but think about it. When he wanted to build a wall to put money in his pocket, by reappropriating funds to stuff he wanted that he could control and get something out of, he did it, declared an emergency. We were being invaded by children and women and some men, all with blisters on their feet and no weapons. So he's getting all of this stuff. He just doesn't read it, doesn't care. He tells you how brilliant he is. This catastrophe is on his watch. He could have listened to what they said, made himself a hero, and gotten reelected by in January to February already, closing down, doing things, testing. He has all these doctors coming out there, which he will disagree with and tell you they don't know what they're talking about. He had them all put together these great charts that we have testing equipment all over the planet, more than enough to test. Well, that's fine. That's like having a car in your driveway that's brand new. And they'll give you the keys to it. But there are no tires on it. There's no gas in the tank. There's no battery under the hood. Again, the testing equipment, the swabs, the things, the reagents. If this man was serious about showing China that we're not going to let them control us because we put all the manufacturing there, including all the things we need. Oh, by the way, Lisa, good morning again from Michigan. Thank you. It is a beautiful state. I was up there many times. In fact, a clue for people who don't know, since Michigan has a lot of territory on the Great Lakes, especially in the Flint and I think the Detroit area and a lot of other parts, when I was up there, I noted that they've got lots of sand, just like we do, except our sand is fine, powdery, and sugar-like that packs down hard. Great for making a racetrack or putting a slab of concrete on without building a foundation. But Michigan, I saw, had all these heavy, granular pieces of sand, more like tiny stones almost. So I got to understand the topography. I like to understand places I am, not just the people, the roads, the trees, the land. This is what makes us know what we're living in and what we can do with it. So shout out to Michigan and all the people. Trump demanded meat processors go back to work. He doesn't care if we die. Well, he doesn't care if we die as long as we don't do it before he gets reelected. So he's going to try and hide the numbers. Remember how we made certain ships stay offshore because he didn't want them counted. If the man was as brilliant as he said he was, he would have in January said, you know what? This is coming here. We don't know how bad it's going to be. Let me put the nation together. Let me do the Defense Production Act. Let me be ready and let me say, what do we need to control ourselves so that we can get through this together? We have governors and mayors who have stood up to do what we need done, that he doesn't really help. He makes like he's having calls with them. But before these trillions of dollars of aid got out there, if you go back and listen to his daily briefings, which he wasn't doing, but he's doing them because he isn't holding rallies. He has to be in everybody's face. He craves attention like a baby. So he holds these press briefings, but he was talking before these appropriations of trillions about, well, I'm meeting with these CEOs and those CEOs and all of these banks and all of the airlines. He's meeting with the top people saying, like, I'm going to get you bailout money or other stuff, but you better remember to put money in my contributions to my campaign. You got to remember where it comes from. And believe me, that's how he operates. It's our money. He's handing it to other people. That first tranche for small businesses, everybody who listens to any kind of news should have heard that at least a few billion have gone to companies that don't need it. What hedge fund? Now, a hedge fund is a company formed by people who have money and investment experience that they put the money in to buy things, to convert them, to pay taxes at a lower rate than we do when we work our ass off to earn money to put food on our table. Let's think about it, folks. Don't listen to what he's telling you. Look at the facts. So, human infrastructure, that's all of us. Everything wouldn't be here, whether it's broken right now or not. We wouldn't enjoy the life we've gotten used to, that we don't always pay attention to what made it the way it is, if we and our predecessors, my father, your grandparents, whatever, didn't put this together, didn't go out there and work. As God said when he kicked Adam and Eve out of the Garden of Eden, I'm paraphrasing in the Bible, he said, you didn't listen, so you're going to go out and work and earn your stuff by the sweat of your brow.
I don't mind sweating as long as people allow me to live and don't rip me off. It's that simple. So his blaming, think about it. He was able to declare emergencies when he wanted to use it. When we need it, not so quick. Meantime, Jared's out there, his son-in-law, trading off our supplies. When he did talk, he said, our surplus, our special supplies that we've done, that we've kept, our reserves. Well, he started making sure it went where he thought it should go. What is he getting the most favors from? When we figure out what he's done while he was in office, we paid him to rob us? It's like hiring the worst family we can find to get in there and steal our cookies. That's what they're doing, folks. So human infrastructure, this blaming shit is doing nothing for us. The thing that people don't understand that I've run into when I was younger and started to understand, worked with a lot of friends, had a couple of courses in psychology, did a lot of reading. Humans can sit in the middle of the most crowded city, and there was a doctor recently, an ER doctor, who committed suicide. I've talked before about battle fatigue, PTSD, you know, whatever you want to call it. When you go into combat, and there are people who I've met who fought, when I was younger, who fought through World War II, almost from the beginning to the end. They didn't go in one battle and get sent home. They just kept fighting. They didn't get shot. They didn't die. They just kept fighting. They knew that they were fighting to accomplish something. Our first responders, from the people driving the buses and the trains, to the delivery people, to the ambulance, to the doctors, to the nurses, to the orderlies, they are a very important part of our human infrastructure. We've all hired them by what we pay for to take care of things that we enjoy and want to do. We will get back to life. If people want to terminate leases of restaurants who are in their building, where are they going to find somebody else to go in there if they don't have an audience to come in and use the place? If we were smart, we'd work together. We'd declare an economic holiday. But let's get back to the economics of all of this. And by the way, there's something called disaster planning. It sounds like, oh, you only use that when there's a disaster. That's what most people understand about FEMA. If there's a mudslide or floods or a snowstorm that's excessive and people are freezing, electricity goes out. We send out teams. They run across the country. You see how power companies help each other or other people donate their services to go work, because this is one country. We have states, yes, but we don't have guards at the border. So disaster planning is really equal to alternative market planning. Market planning is you decide you got a product, you want to sell it, it isn't working. You don't sit there and go out of business and lose all your money. You say, okay, what did I miss? Maybe I'm addressing the wrong market. I should switch my packaging, how I'm advertising, whatever. What they call disaster planning, I always started years ago as a youngster calling it contingency planning. What it means is, I know I want to go about life enjoying it, sitting around, eating my sandwich, having my pizza, cooking what I want, taking a ride, enjoying my freedom. But I always knew that anything could happen. Contingency planning is what you think about in your free time, and you try and find some of it, so that you say, well, what if my building collapsed? What if we ran out of power? What if my child got sick? That's all contingency planning. There are people who keep important papers in certain drawers so that they know where they are if they need them in an emergency. We are not stupid, but disaster planning is contingency planning. There are always things that can happen. But now, instead of a disaster that's in one little area, a flood, a hurricane, or whatever it is, and we rush to help each other because that's what we are as humans. We want them to help us when we need it, so we help them when they need it. We're a country. The important thing is to understand that we always have to be prepared for these things.
So when we have someone who gets rid of our surpluses and other things and pays no attention to forward thinking by our top scientists of what could happen if a new virus hits us, and they've been talking about this for a long time, but the specific one, they knew about it toward the end of last year, excuse me, and when it hit, our president paid no attention to it because it was going to mess up his numbers. If he was smart, as I said, he would have gotten out there, let me take charge, let me do this, let's set this up, let's work together. So, there are economic costs to everything. I've been saying, since almost the beginning of my podcast, I said the millionaires and billionaires may have tons of money, but we have 330, approximately, we haven't hit the number yet, 330 million people. Every one of us, man, woman, child, whatever, we own one share of America. And if we're a voting age, we get one vote. Warren Buffett gets one vote. He could spend his money to influence people, but we don't have to be influenced. We could listen to him, listen to other people. Donald Trump can spend money to tell you that you don't know what you're thinking. Listen to me. This has been going on forever. There are always people who want to convince you. You could say a snake oil salesman, or you could have someone who's serious. Nikola Tesla was envisioning a new type of way of distributing electricity that we never got to. By the way, Rose Lawyer, let me just say hi also on Facebook. We should investigate Trump's trademarks in China, Ivanka behind the transition. Former taxpayer advocate at the IRS called the letter unbelievable and said it made the agency look like it's the handmaiden of the administration and one party. Again, you hear Trump speaking except when he needs a vote on something. When it's done, he signs his signature. When this whole thing started, he said, well, I need a few billion dollars, because he doesn't know what he needs. He just knows he wants money to play with. The House of Representatives, which is 438 or so people, said, no, Mr. President, we're going to give you $8.5 billion. He signed the bill. It's more money for him to play with. What did he know? He didn't say, how'd you get this number? It's money for him to see what he could do with. And they've come up with each of these. They've tried to get investigative bodies. What is wrong with our congressional representatives and senators doing their job of looking what we've spent, not only putting plans in place, but when they sign off on a bill and they vote on it, they should see that it's going out properly. You can look back to the BP debacle in the Gulf Coast where we had the oil spill and it hit tons of businesses. What was set up was a commission and people to do it. BP had to put billions in an account. They said a man who had the background, I'm sorry, I don't remember names all the time, really smart guy, and he was making sure that we're doling it out and people were accounting for what they got, and we were sure why we were giving money to people. It was our money. We made sure we knew where we spent it and for what. That's all Congress is asking about now. The president has just announced the other day that Anthony Fauci, who's been subpoenaed by the House of Representatives to testify. The president has made sure that Fauci is not going to testify to the House. He's too busy. Now, you want to think about it. Trump had been doing these sometimes two-hour shows during the middle of the day where Fauci had to sit there. And he's a man who's been working hard all his life. He could be out talking to people, seeing what's going, making sure things are moving along. The president has wasted more of Tony Fauci's time than anybody in Tony Fauci's life. So now he won't let him testify. He's too busy doing the work we need. Not when Donald Trump wanted him as a trophy to sit on a stage and make it sound like he knew what he was doing. The only one who should inject themselves if they think it's going to work with Clorox or disinfectant is the president. He's a big, strong guy. He thinks it's a great idea. Let him try it. Anyway, so the human infrastructure is all of us. What we get and who makes it happen, we've all seen because we've seen the meatpacking plants. We see what happens when people are congregated in nursing homes. when they start to release the numbers from the nursing homes and the prisons. And the prisons, people are trying to tell you that people get thrown in prison until they have their calendar date. When you average out the lifers and the ones who are on simple things but couldn't pay a bail, so they sit in prison, the average stay is like 25 days. Do we need to have them in there getting infected because they're in these tight quarters? What is the cost to us to cure this after the fact? Prison reform, we've been talking about it forever. But now that we're all understanding the infrastructure that supports our daily life, we could understand what our costs are because of things we are or are not doing. By the way, people on the front lines, like these nurses and doctors, and I've dealt with, when I was in the military, I met a lot of people who fought in a lot of battles during the wars that I didn't participate in. But I respected them, and I talked what happened and the rest. And there was one sergeant who was training me in advanced training when I was younger. And he was interesting, thin slip of a guy, just making us do stuff. He used to say, we're all sandbags. We're bullet stoppers, unless we learn how to be a real soldier. I then found out his background. He was one of the survivors of something that was called the Bataan Death March, where the Japanese had captured this group of people, made them march. I think more than half of them died on the march. The Japanese didn't care at that point. It was a totally different Japan back then. Do I hold the now Japan responsible for that? No. But this man's body survived, but not his mind in a normal way. So he just used to train us to almost death because he was trying to protect us. So I didn't hate the man. I knew why he was training us. He wanted us to be able to survive. So these people who are in these operating rooms, and there's no normal rooms. Everything is an ICU. Everything needs a ventilator. Everything is in trouble. And we don't have anything to treat this yet, except as most of us have probably heard in the last few days about remdesivir. And I hope I said it right. But I'll hear about it if not. Anyway, look, Lisa, I consider the new press secretary another cute distraction for the president. He puts out, I'm sorry to use this analogy, there are people who are going to think, anybody who's listened to my podcast, I came out of a woman. I love women, period. Not just sexually or anything else. I just like being around women more than being around men. I enjoy companionship when I need it, and I can always find it. But I find women, because they've always been multitasking throughout life. They sent us out to go hunt, and if we come back, they'll cook it. But the meantime, they were cleaning up and cooking and whatever. They learned to multitask because of what their chores were versus our chores. We were the big Hulk. Go out and protect us. Go get the meat. I'll do the rest. So when I talk about women, never misunderstand me. I would rather spend my time talking to a woman than talking to a man, although there are plenty of men I would love to sit down and talk to because I love the way they think and the rest of it. But if you gave me my choice and I don't know who's in front of me, 9 out of 10 chances I'd want to talk to the woman. I think they're a little more interesting in their viewpoint. Anyhow, I can't hate men. I am one. And I don't hate myself. I just try and improve myself by learning something every day and researching more. So the new press secretary to me is like Playmate of the Month. They put a new thing out for you to enjoy so you'll buy the next magazine and be distracted. The press secretary in this administration has only done whatever the president allows them. He changes them almost as much as I hope he changes his underwear. So I am not impressed. He has so many acting people in there, and he's gotten rid of so many people in government. You don't have the people that run this organization we call the United States. I have spent a lot of time in Washington during my younger days. We don't have millions of people in a government by accident. It's a gigantic country. We have a lot of things going on, and we need the people to do it. If we have people in Washington who aren't doing their job, We, the people, with that one vote that we each have, we can kick anybody out of there by voting them out of office, no matter what millionaire or billionaire wants to back them. So, okay, anyway, there are people, we're on Spotify, we're on Instagram, we're on Facebook. Again, you can find me generally at AE, the word equals, then MC and the word squared. That's on Facebook. Instagram, same thing, AE equals MC squared. And similar with the Gmail and the rest of it. Again, I tried to keep the logo simple. As I said, I ripped off Einstein's formula by putting the A in front of it because I figured he's not going to sue me. He's dead. And I think I'm paying homage to him by using a famous formula. So, Shakespeare, one of his famous lines was, "All the world is a stage and all the people are players." Shows that we see on TV, demonstrations that we see, these are people acting out something to accomplish a purpose. Do we need Americans going in Michigan, storming the government offices with AR-15s and bands of additional ammo clips to put in case they would use up what they've got? I believe in the Second Amendment. I believe everybody has a right to bear arms, especially on the beach. Take your shirt off and get a good tan. Bear your arms. I'm trained in weapons. I believe in knowing the use of them and being careful that you don't accidentally shoot yourself or someone if you do pick up a gun. But AR-15s, try and get a hunting license anywhere in this country. And when I ask you what kind of hunting you're going to do, they'll ask you if it's by a bow, a rifle, or whatever. There's nothing on hunting licenses that I've ever seen. I haven't seen them all. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong. Where they tell you, yeah, take an AR-15 and go in the woods and chop down the animals and the trees when you burst off all those shots. And maybe kill a few people who are out of your sight that those bullets that missed hit. Folks, we can't have people doing things that constitute what's called insurrection. And these are a minority. If all the people, what they used to refer to as the silent majority, came out there, well, they did come out in 2017 and 2018. We were too apathetic in 2016. Let's not make that mistake. And even if a libertarian gets out there because they don't like what Trump's doing, and if Bernie isn't running, don't forget the objective is we've got a man who's destroying what our country is all about for his own gain. He can do just as well by opening up his own little radio show and making probably $500 million a year by all of his people who love him subscribing. So, Rose Lawyer on Facebook. I thought I'd see PPL marching to be contaminated and die. People marching. Pfizer says the coronavirus vaccine could be ready by fall. Look, I think from the statistics I've seen, we never developed a vaccine faster than 4 or 5 years. But let me make it easier. Tony Fauci, the other day when he talked about remdesivir, Tony Fauci was around and important when HIV first occurred. And I think in the 83-86 era, he said we were so happy when we found something that would block it and stop it from taking over and killing you. To my knowledge, and please correct me if I'm wrong, there is no vaccine for HIV. But what we have done, if we found different things that stop it in different ways, because in each body it acts a little differently, and we treat it. We have cocktails, as they call it, of drugs, because a cocktail is a mixed drink. And with the right thing, there are people who live in their life. They did something that they could have been a little more cautious about, but you know what? Any of us can make a mistake. But you don't want to die from the mistake. So remdesivir is something that, yes, they're going to do it, but it's only help people who are in ICU units and on ventilators. And by the way, let's talk about ventilators for a quick minute. The United Kingdom got 250 ventilators from China. Their doctors have warned people that these could kill you. we've ceded this important medical equipment to places where people who set the companies up offshore of our big countries like the UK and the US who used to make this stuff, they make more profit because they keep it offshore. But the ventilators China sent us could kill people. It's not what they wanted. And if you read the articles, do a little research on it, it's not just the ventilators, it's the masks. It's the reagents in the masks, too. A mask isn't just a piece of paper with a couple of rubber bands on it. The one I'm wearing almost is. It's a very simple mask. I wear it in solidarity with the rest of you, telling you that when you're out or in a crowd, even if you're with a group in your living room, put it on. It's a little help that could keep down the transmission. Nothing's perfect, but it helps. This is a statement when I wear it. Yes, do I get hot? Do I suck it in when I breathe? Yes, yes, yes. So all this stuff and all the things we have to do, when it comes to the PTSD, depression, this doctor who committed suicide recently and other people who are dying or committing suicide, we've seen it in wars. We've seen it in situations. If a man's on the front line of fires that are going on for months, you get tired. You feel you're not achieving anything. I once talked about on my podcast, psychologists who I studied with who told me, and I traced it to make sure they weren't kidding, psychiatrists in California, they'd open up their shop, actors, actresses would come in. They would never be cured of whatever they were talking about. There used to be a high suicide rate for psychiatrists and psychologists in California because the doctors were frustrated that they weren't achieving their purpose of curing this person. Well, sometimes the person comes in, they want to let it out, 2.5 men when you see the chief guy, I'm sorry, I keep forgetting names, but he's with Lynch, the tall blonde lady who's a great comedian. She plays a psychiatrist. The interaction is perfect. He's half listening to her. He just wants to get it out and get some reassurance. And she's just saying, hey, you're paying for it. She's not going to commit suicide because you're not really listening. You come back next week, I'll remind you again. Do not. That's what it means at the beginning when I said we are never alone. There was a guy named Bernard Mays who in 1961, he was a Brit who came over here, worked at NPR, National Public Radio. He helped found it, I think, at a point he was running it. He established over in California, I think the San Francisco area, in 61, the first suicide hotline. He put ads on buses at the time, and it was called Bruce or Bernie. I forget which name he used. And he put out his phone number. He got one call, and then it kept growing and growing. People realized he was serious. We have developed all of these 800 numbers, these hotlines. Every city or town or anything that's decent size has got a helpline to call. Even if you're a crank and, you know, something bothers you because you cut your finger, call. Do never feel that you're alone. That's what Alcoholics Anonymous and all these drug rehab things are about. You're not the only person on the planet who's going through this. You are not suffering by yourself. Don't sit in your house and say, I can't take this anymore. You are the people who are helping us get through this. When you commit suicide, you're giving up on all of us who are depending on you. Suicide's never an answer. Suicide actually is another bump that we create. Somebody's got to replace you. We got to take you off the front line and put somebody else in there. Never, never think you're alone. You want to find somebody? Again, take a walk. You'll run into people. Again, Judy Brady, Facebook group. Vote for the country, not the person. That's correct. But it's the people who are running that are going to run our country. If you vote for Trump, he'll continue doing what he's been doing. And we don't need a dictator. You could just listen to what he says, do your searching. He uses phrases that Hitler and other people, Napoleon, have used to tell the people that he's going to protect you from what? Who's going to protect us from him? If you're wearing a mask, tag us by using hashtag. That's what my technical people did. Please, as I said, unless you're alone, please put a mask on. I've got a couple of more things. I've got a big one that I'll just hit right now. As I said, we each have one vote. We each own one share of the USA, a big association that we're all part of. I've told people throughout my podcast that that one share we each own is worth approximately $200,000. Now, my background is accounting, finance, taxes, economics, statistics, all of that junk. I understand numbers. I did my research. You'll hear about the national debt. You'll hear we're spending another few trillion. You don't hear about our currency going down and nobody wanting to hold it or buy it. So let me give you some simple example of it. When I said 200,000, I was taking one of the lower values, being conservative. No matter how outspoken I am, I still don't like to go overboard, so we depend on something that may not fully be there. But at $200,000 a share, for 330 million people. We are talking, and again, I got this number by looking at all the assets we own, federal buildings, land, military ware, everything you can think of. And I didn't liquidate it, which would give it more value in some cases. Bullets, everything that we've paid for with our taxes. And then I took all the debt that we owe against it, and we had this net, and it comes down to $200,000 a person. On the conservative side, $200,000 times 330 million is $66 trillion. Check my math. Maybe I did it too quickly. That's the minimum value if we liquidated all of our investment in this country. This country that we own, that's what that share is equivalent to. So, I would say, still being conservative, that instead of $66 trillion, I could easily tell you that if we'd sell off everything we own, not in a fire sale, but piecemeal here and there, it's worth at least $100 trillion, easily. So when we spend 2 to 5, whatever the number's going to be when we're done with this fight that we're in for our lives, for our livelihood, our way of being, that will tell you that we have a lot of ways to go. And by the way, Professor Krugman, you can look him up. He's a well-known economist. He was on the other day. I like listening to him. I'm an economist. I don't agree with every economist. I have my favorites. Anyway, Professor Krugman was on the other day on TV, on some shows where he was talking about the debt and the infrastructure and the rest of it. He said, look, he studied his history and the economics in that history. He said, after World War II, the United Kingdom and the United States, we both had billions of dollars of debt that we used to conquer a maniac that was trying to take over the world, or a couple of maniacs if you counted Japan back then. He said, we didn't raise taxes to everybody. We went into economic expansion little by little. We wore it down. We bought new assets. As I said, we're at least $100 trillion in the black if you liquidated everything on a conservative basis. We're spending our money on our survival. And when you get people like Mitch McConnell saying, let other cities go bankrupt, he's an idiot because that would hurt our dollar value, because people look at us as a country, not as various states. They understand how we're set up. Europe followed our example years ago when they set up the European Economic Union. Anyway, so the UK and the US, billions of dollars disappeared just as we grew and went through life. I'm being given the finger, folks, by my technical crew, meaning I'm down to about 1 minute. I forgot to say the hashtag. Okay. Again, if you're wearing a mask, use the hashtag AE equals MC squared and let us know that you are understanding we're in it together, that you are one of our masked citizens. The point is, that Paul Krugman said even Japan, they had this lost decade, if you look it up, where they stupidly did things and everything went the wrong way. But those billions, they pushed it off in the bank. Nobody even thinks about it anymore. It disappeared with economic growth and population growth. We have to address